Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly with you on this Thursday. And it's now time to go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, as we are joined by Andrew Allegretta, the voice of Vanderbilt football, for his weekly visit to the program. Vanderbilt now 8-2, the 14th ranked team in the country. Andrew, thanks for taking some time. Hope you're enjoying the start to your weekend off. Congratulations on another win last week.
Congratulations to the women's basketball team on a nice win last night, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, 3-0, and get a weekend off as well before going up to Western Kentucky next Wednesday. Andrew, that game against Auburn, even Clark Lee said it in his post-game press conference that is not the way that he expected that game to go. It's an Auburn offense that had struggled, but under a new head coach, a new offensive play caller, they were able to unlock something. Vanderbilt had to come back in that game, and it may not have been pretty, but it is important for Vanderbilt to learn how to win those games late, because that's what you're going to have to do if you're going to find your way into the playoffs.
And there's also probably another element there too, Jake, which Norm touched on at the end of the broadcast. I'm sure he touched on it with you in the post game. It's like they know for sure now, in the past 2 weeks with Texas and with Auburn, they can just give Diego Pavia the football and say, win us a football game. The conventional wisdom for the better part of the season was it's a ball control offense. You're going to have to convert on third downs. It has to be third down and three. The rushing yards have to be good. If you get outside of that lane, it's going to be tricky for Vanderbilt. Well, versus Texas, versus Auburn, they got outside of that lane, and they put up 30-some-odd points versus a very good Texas defense and 45 points versus an Auburn defense, which you can look at the records all you want. That's an elite unit in Auburn's defense, and they just dropped 45.
Yeah, the offense has been fantastic the last couple of weeks. The defense, on the other hand, do you have any concerns about that group? It was a Texas offense that had struggled to find much consistency, and they put up 34. Auburn had just put up 3 against Kentucky. They put up 38 against Vanderbilt. Do you think it was more, hey, we just need to get into this bye week and reset, kind of running out of gas? Or do you think there are any legitimate concerns as we head to the final two games of the regular season?
Well, there's probably some validity to just kind of the fatigue and wear and tear of the season. Clark has talked about that to the team. He's talked about it in the press conference about kind of the fog and the haze and the intensity that a season can create, right? Like they talked about back in January defining what they wanted their season to be, and that's one of those things that's easy to do in January. But then you get into the heart of the schedule and you actually have to do those things in the moments. That separates championship teams from teams that go 500, but there's still a fatigue factor there. So I'm sure that's part of it. Now, the other part of it is, I've always heard the phrase that styles make the fights. I think there's probably a button that Auburn can push and a button that Texas can push with their perimeter skill set, which is something that Vanderbilt is going to have to continue to address throughout the course of the season. It's still an SEC team, so we'll see what happens in that game. But Tennessee certainly has the athletes on the perimeter to give Vanderbilt some problems. One of the things that Vanderbilt has been able to do to sort of mitigate potentially the fact that a Cam Coleman or a Wingo or whoever it happens to be on the outside can expose you was getting a lot of pressure. That pressure has dug a little bit, the defensive line. So we'll see if they can get back to that. It's dovetailed a little bit through their blitz packages. I think one of the things that Steve Gregory would tell you is a level of wanting them to be in third down and eights and third down and nines a little bit more so they can get to their exotic blitz pressures. They haven't been able to do that quite as much because Texas and Auburn kind of stayed ahead of the chains with some of their athleticism on the perimeter. So I don't know if I'm raising some sort of gigantic red flag. I think there's some things in the matchup that Auburn and Texas can do that perhaps a Missouri couldn't do, perhaps an LSU couldn't do, perhaps a South Carolina couldn't do, and then just the wear and tear of the season. There's probably both of those things colliding.
Now, Andrew, as you look at the big picture of this and the rankings sit here and they fall into place, do you think Vanderbilt is kind of falling victim to, I don't want to say a bias, but like a – hey, it's not as big of a product when you look at them being behind other two-loss teams despite their strength of schedule?
I don't know. That's a question for the guys inside the committee room. I think what was interesting today, and I've got to delve more into it, I just saw maybe like a half an hour before jumping on with you guys that Mac Rhodes, who chaired the committee, is stepping aside for some personal reasons, the Baylor athletic director. I know we all kind of felt a little bit squishy about his explanation with Utah and Notre Dame ahead of Vanderbilt. I was listening to the previous segment, too, where you talked about stats. Stats get messy, guys, because, you know, you referenced the Booger McFarland quote. There's a quote that is attributed to Vin Scully. I don't actually know if he said it about stats being like a lamppost for the intoxicated. You use it for support, not for elimination.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's actually Vin Scully or if that's just one of those things that you read on a quote that has Vin Scully's name at the bottom. I don't know. I am intrigued by how they have pieced that together. And I don't know. I sit back here, and I think we can have a little bit of heartburn about the placement of Vanderbilt with two football games left for the doors. I sit here hopeful and optimistic that if you take care of your business, the last image the committee is going to have is you going into a freakishly hostile Neyland Stadium against a good Tennessee team and getting a victory if that's how it's going to play out. Now, if Vanderbilt doesn't take care of its business, the conversation we have right now doesn't matter at all, PD. So I am optimistic that sitting at 10-2, coming off a win versus Tennessee, again, this is how it would have to play out, is a pretty loud statement. And I don't know if Utah can make that statement down the stretch. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens with Notre Dame versus Pittsburgh. I mean, that's probably a slightly underrated Pittsburgh team that has typically been, you know, plucky and feisty and pretty solid under Pat Narduzzi. We'll see what plays out. I think Andy Staples said something yesterday on one of their podcasts, like, everybody expects chalk at this point in the season. Like, oh, of course the team that's ranked 13th or 14th will keep winning. What happens? It's not usually chalk. So let's see where it goes. I'm a little bit squishy on some of the current explanations, but the explanation is absent a 10-2 Vanderbilt team that would be coming off a win versus Tennessee if that's how it plays out.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, man. You didn't mention them, but I take a two-loss Vandy team over a one-loss BYU team. That's just me. But that being said, the reason why I would do that is because I feel like their schedule is vicious. So I want to ask you, just from you being around them and seeing them, how much do you think like this tough schedule has kind of weathered them to be successful down this stretch?
Yeah, good question. I think what's interesting about a lot of it is people are discounting the toughness of Vanderbilt's schedule. I was listening to the College Game Day podcast the other night, too, and there was kind of a shrug at Vanderbilt's schedule because how do we do the evaluations? Like, does Vanderbilt have three top 15 victories, which at the time the game was played, they sure were, South Carolina, Missouri, and LSU? Or does Vanderbilt have none because all of a sudden South Carolina struggles, LSU has gone through their problems. I still think Missouri's a pretty darn good team, but now they've got a backup quarterback. Like, how do you go through all of that? I certainly think that you are still talking about week in and week out facing the depth and the skill set of elite SEC athletes, which is really difficult. I think, kind of to Jake's point at the start of this, the past month or so has proven to Vanderbilt that they can execute victories in lots of different ways. And it's helped teach them that they can push buttons that maybe they didn't expect to push at the start of the season. If they need to push the Diego Pavia hero button, they can, because they did versus a great Auburn team. If they need to go 3-3 at halftime versus Missouri and win a slugfest, they can. I don't know, guys. I mean, there's been a lot of different variety to the games of Vanderbilt football. So I think if anything, the season has shown them that they've got the toughness, they've got the resiliency, and they've got the flexibility to be effective in a lot of different games.
Andrew, last one for you here. Diego Pavia right in the mix for the Heisman Trophy. And 2 weeks ago, the counter to his campaign was, oh, he doesn't match up statistically with some of the other candidates. Well, that's not the case after the last 2 weeks. I would argue that nobody in the race pushes their team forward more than Diego Pavia. Just how impactful has he been the last few weeks when, right, your defense struggles, you have to put the ball in his hands, and he's been able to execute pretty much every single time?
Well, that's a lovely tee that you just put that ball on for me, Jake. That's
there you
very
go. You're welcome.
Delightful for you. Look, again, there's a lot of really good contenders for the Heisman. It's an interesting season in which there is not this far and away crazy statistical season from a Joe Burrow or whatever that sort of trumps any other argument. Statistically, and it's 2 weeks, right? I'm not arguing that 2 weeks defines a Heisman campaign. But the past 2 weeks, Diego Pavia has more statistical production than any other contender or legitimate contender in the Heisman race. That's more than Sagan, pass yards, rush yards, touchdowns. It's more than Mendoza, pass yards, rushing yards, touchdowns. It's more than Reed, passing yards. Reed and Pavia the past 2 games have the exact same number of rushing yards, and Pavia has got more touchdowns. Welcome to the land of subjectivity, where you get to define what means what the word best player in college football means, quote-unquote best. So have fun with that, because everyone's going to slice that apple differently. But I know all of us that live here in Nashville has watched Diego Pavia elevate a program with Clark Lee, with Tim Beck, with Jerry Kill, literally infect the entire locker room with confidence, which is what it needed, and then is able to put up statistics against guys not just good but great defenses in Texas and Auburn. I don't know if he's going to win, but the argument that I would continue to make is, like, goodness, he has got to be sitting in a seat in a tux in New York City in December. He has done everything in some fashion that you would want a great college football player to do to define best player in college football. And if Clark Lee is in the locker room telling the entire team after the Auburn game, the game ball goes to your Heisman Trophy front runner, Diego Pavia. I mean, I get that he's biased and we're all biased, but that's a pretty loud statement. We'll see where the next 2 games go. The part of this that you've just got to be honest with is wins and losses matter. If those toes from Cooper end up out of bounds and Indiana loses its first game, I mean, we're not having the same conversation about Mendoza, but now you get to tell this story about what a heroic comeback and, the hero leads his team to victory despite all of the odds because a toe from Cooper came down the right way. So Vanderbilt's got to win football games, and he's going to have continued elevated performances versus both Kentucky and Tennessee. And again, I tend to think that if they go down the stretch and play well versus Kentucky and Tennessee, he's got good games, and you get this kind of resounding image in your head of Vanderbilt going 10-2 with Pavia as a victor in Neyland Stadium, which is going to be brutally difficult. But if you've got that image to finish things off, I tend to think he sits in New York City somewhere in December.
100% agree. Andrew, as always, appreciate you coming on. Excited for the final couple games of the year, and hope you enjoy your weekend off.
Thank you. By the way, go Vanderbilt soccer.
Yes.
First round NCAA tournament at home on Friday. Best of luck to them. Number one seed.
Yes. Thank you for making that point. We had Darren Ambrose on earlier in the week. 7 o'clock kick against Tennessee Tech on Friday. So excited to see them try and make a run through the NCAA tournament. Thanks, Andrew. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football. Commodores off this weekend, 8-2 on the year. They turn their attention to Kentucky next weekend. We'll react to what Andrew had to say coming up next and wrap up hour number two. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.